in Berkeley. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we are joined again by Catherine Austin Fitz for our weekly segment called Community Business. Usually we hear Catherine on Wednesdays, but today, this week, we needed to get together on Thursday. Catherine, welcome back, and it's good always to have you with us on Flashpoints.
It's always good to be here.
All right, well, let's start with Bernie Madoff. He was in court. He pleaded guilty. He said he was very, very sorry about all the people that he hurt in what may be or may not be the largest, biggest single financial swindle. I doubt if it is, but
I doubt it.
It was certainly ugly, and a lot of people got hurt.
So.
Now, we keep talking about one man, and of course, it makes sense that he goes from his penthouse to the jailhouse, but this was going on for a long time. Could it be there aren't other people who are engaged in this, whose names we might know all the way up the food chain?
There's no way that this could have been a lone ranger. It's impossible. And so the real question here, it's obvious from what's happened, Dennis, that they don't want any information coming out or any process that would illuminate for the public what's really going on here. So we've got a deal. We don't know what the deal is. My guess is it'll be interesting to see what happens to his family, is that he's taking the fall for everybody and everything in exchange for his family getting taken care of. So it's just, if you've ever seen Godfather 3, you know how this works. So my guess is there's a deal, and what the powers that be want is for Madoff to take the fall and the truth to never see the light of day.
All right. So here's a swindle, $50, $100 billion. It's hard to figure it out. It happens on two or three continents. How many people do you need to pull this off? Can he do it alone?
I would think at a minimum you need the, you certainly need the Treasury and the intelligence agencies going along. You need one or both of those telling the SEC to stand down, which clearly had happened on one, if not more, occasion. And you need the New York authorities to stand down as well. So you clearly have something that had, and you need their banks. So we have big bankers involved with Madoff who are also going along. So this is a very, this is woven into the fabric of the biggest institutions on Wall Street in Washington. And it can't happen without air cover from some or all of them. Certainly, you know, the kind of air cover we've seen in situations like this is National Security Council and intelligence agency, you know, basically saying leave these guys alone. So we don't know what the true story is here, but what we know is there's a concerted effort for it to not come out. But we know from the press reports that the trustee has only recaptured about $1 billion, and there's now $68 billion, I think, missing. And if you look at Madoff's clientele, you have some pretty influential, powerful, serious people who I think are going to want to know what really happened.
Well, I certainly would like to know what really happened, and the listeners to this broadcast would like to know, but I do know this, that Madoff's operation included, you know, he's busted for money laundering, and he's busted for mail fraud, wire fraud. He's using the latest technology in communications at the international level. This is the technology that the Bush administration and administrations before that made a point of heavily monitoring. But in the last 8 and 10 years, this kind of communication was monitored at all levels of national intelligence. So what's going on?
You know, it used to always amaze me when I'd ask somebody, okay, now if we spend, well, now it's up to $600 billion a year on the military, and not one missile or soldier can cross the borders without setting off 500 alarms. How is it that thousands of truckloads of drugs get back and forth every year? So the reality is this stuff can't happen without major institutional knowledge and support. It just can't.
And how many times would he or the people working for him have to so-called, they're saying that he committed perjury and gave false filings to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission over a 10 or a 15-year, $100 billion operation? How many false statements? How many times does he have to file statements with how many different people? How could none of these people? I'm sorry, I'm going on here, but it's extraordinary.
But what's extraordinary is that anyone can say, you know, can propose the Lone Ranger explanation. This is sort of the lone assassin. This is the financial equivalent of the lone assassin, that anybody could continue to put forward that theory with a straight face. I mean, it's a little bit like me saying that you lived your life in Berkeley for a month, but no one ever saw you. You were completely invisible. Well, how could that be? You know, it's kind of like saying somebody went without eating for 10 years. You know, I mean,
I could probably get away with that and still be overweight. But anyway, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're speaking with Catherine Austin Fitz. She is our translator from Wall Street to Main Street. And speaking about Main Street, Catherine, foreclosures are up some 6% in the last quarter or months, and they're expecting many, many more. Yesterday we did a story. There's over 1.5 million homeless children out on the street now, and the people we were speaking to were saying with these foreclosures, we can expect another 2 million kids on the street. What's this looking like to you?
Well, and it's very concentrated. In fact, California is one of the worst places in terms of foreclosures. The housing recession has not yet started, Dennis. We've had the burst of a bubble, and now we're watching significant layoffs. And traditionally in a recession, you get the layoffs, and after the layoffs cycle through the economy, you get a housing recession. And I would expect that housing recession to hit this summer. So I was saying last week that we're about 50% through the workout or shakeout process, and I just read a statement by the head of the Singapore Wealth Sovereign Fund who said we're only 30% of the way through. But we have much to integrate and incorporate. And the reality is we have an economy that's kept going with government money and government credit and debt. It's not fundamentally productive. And so until we change and become fundamentally productive, this is going to continue to happen.
Well, like all the pro-banker presidents, all the bailout presidents, all the presidents that have supported a war economy, it does appear that President Barack Obama is doing a lot of the same things and assuming that you can put people to work through the defense industry and through war. You want to talk a little bit? I get phone calls, and people would call these people conspiracy nuts, but like I just took a message here before we started speaking from a listener who said that, here is Obama supporting the sort of the model, the sort of control the world, control all the resources by war model of administration, and to do it, he's busy funding all the banks and all the institutions that make money on war. What do you say to this caller?
It's true. It's absolutely true. For 500 years, we've had something called the central banking warfare model, and since 1980, really since World War II, technology has taken it to a whole new sort of venal level, and what we're watching is economic warfare globally, where people hold, we're the reserve currency globally, and we're the reserve currency globally because we have the force, we have the warfare machinery to force people to take our securities and our currency even though they continue to drop in value. So this is the model, and this is the model that sustains our cash flows of almost every household and certainly every community in the country. And we've talked before about my red button story, which is really just a story that describes the extent to which there's popular support to do whatever you have to do to keep the cash flows coming. And it's going to the one thing we need to change this is everyone in America and worldwide to say, you know something, we don't want the cash flows to continue to be generated with more government debt and crazy government spending. We want to stop. We're prepared to say no. Let's not keep the short-term cash coming, and let's stop doing the things we need to do militarily to force people to to subsidize this, because the first world is basically destroying the second and third world to get this month's cash fix. And if you look at the budget, then it's very simple. We get $1 trillion from individual taxes, and then we get more than $1 trillion from basically forcing people to buy our paper all around the world, and then we give the money to the banks and the military. I mean, that's our model.
And ultimately, that's what's got us into the crash mode.
Right. But let me tell you where it's going if we don't change it. Because the risk is not that our economy slows down. I have a new article called The Data Beast. You can link to it from my blog. And what it describes is the first the Bush administration and now the Obama administration's proposal for a healthcare database. And this literally is, you know, the mark of the beast. This is implementing the information technology we need to put a chip into every human being in this country.
Talk a little bit more about that, because you've been on to this, and it is incredibly worrisome in the context of, we talked about Big Brother, this takes it, puts it on steroids.
Right. What we're talking about doing is taking the most intimate personal data on each person in the country and putting it in a database that technically is owned and controlled by the government. Sorry, I have a cold. But if you look at, you know, who will have access to it, you're talking about the most powerful, I would say, shadow government / secret societies in the world. And what that means is they can aggregate this data with all the other financial data. They can require doctors to hold data in digital form. They can cut off your health care by simply, you know, fiddling with your doctor in a variety of different ways. If somebody in the upper echelons needs a transplant and you just happen to fit the profile, you know, I ask you, how long do you think it's going to be till you have an accident?
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. All right, Catherine, we're running out of time, and I want to talk to you about an interesting lecture that Seymour Hersh gave the other day. And it's got everybody's attention. It's not about an article he's written yet, but he's working on a book. And I guess he was talking about, you could say, an executive assassination ring. And he
yes.
was talking about essentially under the radar U.S. hit squads, young people going in, kidnapping, torturing, and killing. And it has sort of a corporate flavor to it. And as I read on and listened, we're going to see if we can get a little sound from that, but I thought about the kinds of situations that you faced, Catherine, as a former high-level official in a presidential administration. Did you catch Hersh, and what was your response?
Well, I wasn't surprised at all. You know, after when I made a mistake of trying to oppose the housing bubble and warn people about it, I literally ended up in litigation with the federal government and dealt with very significant amounts of physical harassment and surveillance. And finally, and it was during the same period that Hersh is describing, in 2004, I wrote a letter to Condoleezza Rice about 9/11 that got picked up by UPI and was sort of caused consternation to the administration. And then June 14th, I had litigation against the federal government. We won the big case in the Court of Claims on June 14th. And I got a signal from my lawyers that the Department of Justice wanted to settle, so I had arranged a Swiss bank account because I didn't want the money in the U.S. I just was concerned that once we won and if anybody had to pay us, they'd just, you know, pull another dirty trick. So I faxed the signature pages back to the Swiss on June 16th, and suddenly, Dennis, for the next 2 days, Halliburton was the number one user on my website by a huge amount, not a little amount, but just a huge amount, and then that third day I was poisoned very badly. Some of my doctors think they were trying to kill me. And
you were poisoned?
Yeah.
What was the poison?
We don't know. I was poisoned four times during the litigation. Three were arsenic, and the fourth was probably a lead concoction. We can't figure it. You know, we know what my tests show. The normal lead content is 1.7 times, and mine is, my original was 47. My nutritionist couldn't believe I could even walk. So, but it was pretty bad. And, you know, when things like that happen, you're busy trying to, you know, survive. You're not remembering, oh, you know, how can I document this? Because it doesn't, these aren't the kind of things you can document or talk to anybody about or you know, go see. I mean, who do you call? You can't call the local police. You can't go see the Department of Justice. What do? So you just, you know, you do the best you can. But you're in a situation which we're all in, which is the government is no longer the authorities we go to when we're in danger. They're the sheriff of Nottingham, and we need to run and hide from them and protect our assets from them.
Well, I can tell you this dialogue that happened in the Midwest between Seymour Hersh and others was troubling. And here's just some of what he said. The Central Intelligence Agency was very deeply involved in domestic activities against people they thought to be enemies of the state without any legal authority for it. They haven't been called on yet, and they probably never will, he's going on to say. He goes on to say, Congress has no oversight over it. It's an executive assassination ring, essentially, and it's been going on and on and on. Under President Bush's authority, they've been going into countries, not talking to the ambassador or the CIA station chief, and finding people on a list and executing them and leaving. That's been going on in the name of all of us.
Well, but if you're going to run a highly centralized economic model, this is what you have to do to force people to do things that are uneconomic. And why would anybody buy, you know, trillions of or billions of dollars of treasuries when they're going down in value? But you wouldn't unless, you know, it's like the movie Syriana, a missile will jump on your head if you don't. So that's why it's so important that we convert to more sustainable economics, because the only way to keep this model going is with this kind of force and terror.
All right. And the other way that you keep the model going is you make sure you have the mainstream press on your side, regurgitating, being good stenographers, and not asking any of the questions of the people who are at the centers of power, whether it's in the corporations or in the government. And in that regard, believe me, I'm building up to a question here, Catherine. I was listening to three or four of the CNN advisors, you know, taking questions from the audience about foreclosures and dealing with banks. And one of the questions was from a listener who said, well, now I've heard all about these problems that Citibank is having. Is there any reason, though, because they have some good deals and mortgage stuff, is there any reason why I shouldn't do business with Citibank? And, of course, the advisor said, absolutely not. They're solid. And even if they're taken over, the people who take them over will be responsible to deal with you. Catherine, you want to respond to that?
There's only one kind of enforcement that's going to have effect, and that's called good old-fashioned shunning. If someone can steal your money, harm your neighbor, lie, cheat, steal money from the government, and you consider them socially acceptable and acceptable to do business with, then you get a criminal society, and this is how we got here.
All right. I think we're going to leave it on that upbeat note. If people want to find out more about what Catherine Austin Fitz is doing, they can go to her website, Solari.com. If they want to communicate, Solari.com/blog. You can read her blog and read about her investigation into this collection of every little scintilla or piece of information about your history, your medical career, and so the government will know everything. You get a chip, and they know where you are all the time.
They can shut off your money.
But fortunately, I don't have to worry about that because I don't have any. We have been speaking with Catherine Austin Fitz. We do usually on Wednesdays, and the segment is called Community Business. Catherine, as always, a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.